I'm Gilbert Gottfried, and I'm here with my co-host Frank Santopadre, and this is Gilbert and Frank's Amazing Colossal Obsessions, and we're once again recording at Nutmeg with our engineer Frank Verderosa. And we have a guest here who looks and sounds vaguely familiar to me. And he's a producer, director, and whatever the hell you do behind the scenes.
Mostly sit around and drink.
Yeah.
A comedy writer, an actor,
which
a
shows
Renaissance
like
man.
Blossom, Grace Under Fire, Roseanne.
Till Death.
Till Death, Little Till Death, Little Tom Arnold.
Yes. Tom Arnold. Yes. Less Than Perfect, a show I liked.
That was a good show.
And and someone who I remember since our days going to Catch a Rising Star every night.
Oh, yeah. When you were just a young stripling lad.
what year are we talking about, guys?
I think 1980-ish, somewhere in there, maybe 79, 80, 81.
Yeah, and I had already been going there a long time before. So it's
right.
Yeah. And
yeah, Adrian actually brought me in.
Adrian Tolsch.
Yeah.
The late Adrian Tolsch.
Yes.
Funny lady.
Late, great, way older than we ever thought, Adrian Tolsch.
Hey, Gilbert, do you think we should tell people who you're interviewing?
Oh, that's right.
Thank you, Frank.
Well, I'm so world-renowned that it's very rarely necessary.
Slight.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.J. Wall.
Thank you. Thank you. Please.
Welcome, JJ.
Thank you.
Now, I remember one time being out in L.A., and you and your wife, Marilyn, were going to be going out of town, and you said you could stay at our apartment.
Yes.
And
which had a beautiful view of all of Los Angeles.
Yes. And you said you just, just feed the cat, change the litter, keep taking the mail, pile it neatly by the door, and water the plants.
Pretty much,
and, yeah. And then you came home.
Yes.
Yeah. And
there was a bottle of Tide in the refrigerator. All of the shades in this beautiful view apartment were drawn tight shut.
Of course.
The plants were dead. And I believe the cat was half dead.
Did you not feed the cat and change the litter?
Well, in all
so
fairness,
it worked out.
Yeah, in all fairness, if you leave Tide out, it could turn sour.
Yes. So I know that you were trying to preserve the Tide.
Did you do your socks and underwear in JJ's sink? I hesitate to.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why the Tide was. He was washing undergarments
right.
In your sink, JJ.
I didn't realize until I saw that piece of shit movie that was actually what must have happened. Were you jerking off children or sharks? I keep mixing that up in the movie. Oh, it wasn't you. It was a French guy in a white robe.
Yeah, you just saw some weird movie, you said.
Yes, that's right. And people looked vaguely familiar in it.
And what was this movie with the French guy?
I think it was called Gilbert.
Oh.
And he either masturbated children or sharks. I never quite figured that out. He always wore a white robe.
A stolen white robe.
A stolen white robe with a W on it.
Mm-hmm.
I assume that was for whacking off or something.
Yes. Now.
But I did watch that today.
Now, I don't know if you'd want to admit to this on the air, but you worked for two, and we could cut this out if you
know. Uh-oh.
You worked for two, behind the scenes, in two shows, Grace Under Fire.
Right.
With Brett Butler.
Brett Butler, yes.
And, of course, Roseanne with Roseanne.
Well, I didn't work on Roseanne. She thought I worked on Roseanne. Roseanne thought I worked on it.
Yeah.
She would come out of her offices periodically and yell at me and then say, oh, you're not one of mine. She would storm back into
it. Hilarious.
It was. But then I also worked for Tom Arnold Do you remember when you were on Tom Arnold? I should say, do
yes.
you remember
yes,
Tom,
he was.
Tom Arnold, first of all?
Yeah, you asked me to come on the Tom Arnold show.
And remember, he and I almost had the physical, actual confrontation.
Oh, tell us about
this. One of the most frightening experiences of my life, because I couldn't stop my feet from moving forward. And I was going at him.
Yeah.
He was complaining about some stupid joke or whatever it was. And you were there just kind of like, oh, this should be fun.
You didn't think to break it up, Gil?
No.
Yeah, be
no.
a peacemaker?
Yeah, he didn't step in.
Yeah, I was going to do my kickboxing. And
yes.
Now I think it was said that there was a trifecta if you worked behind the scenes.
Also then Sybil Shepherd would have been included. There were four Carsey Werner shows that were all pretty difficult. And, well, it was Grace Under Fire, but it started with Home Improvement. That's where it all started.
Really?
Home Improvement, then Grace Under Fire, then Sybil. And Home Improvement, they fired Matt Williams, I think was his last name.
That's right.
Who was the creator of the show.
Yep.
And then, you know, things kind of changed from that point on.
They used to call those shows, if I have this right, writer eaters. Because they would
Tim
eat writers alive.
Is. Yeah. Yeah, they were mean to writers.
Yeah,
generally. And
that was the
the actors, not necessarily the studio. The studio was okay,
right?
Except they allowed that behavior.
I know Chuck Lorre had his issues with Brett Butler and Sybil.
I came
Sybil.
On second year. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He went from Roseanne to Brett Butler to Sybil. So he did have the trifecta.
Wow. So he was like a war hero,
combat pay,
in his way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. In his way.
And what were some of the things that they would do that would make life so difficult?
Spit on scripts and throw them in the garbage.
Wow.
That was one thing. Brett used to love to do Corky from I think it was called Life Goes On.
Oh, yeah.
Down Syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
She used to imitate him and say, what kind of script is this? This is shit. And he would throw it in the garbage. So there were variation. It always ended up with the script being thrown in the garbage.
That's like Gleason level stuff, like as far as writer abuse goes.
Yeah. Well, Gleason, I remember a friend of mine worked on Gleason, and he said at one point Gleason turned to Sammy Spear, who was his musical director for eons, and said, Sammy, the music's no good. It's never been any good.
Oh, my God.
At that point, I think Sammy Spear had worked for him for 30 years.
And he used to just, I heard also from the same guy that Gleason would pick up the script and just drop the pages in the garbage next to the desk.
One page at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess in later years, just as life speeded up, I guess the sitcom stars decided they'd just throw the whole script away and go through it one page at a time.
I heard, I hope it's true, but I feel for the writers, that Gleason would throw their paychecks in the swimming pool and say, dive for them, boys.
I heard that was Hope.
Actually. Oh, was it Hope?
Bob Hope was a notorious.
Whoa.
I'm not sure that story is to his, but I mean, I remember one very funny writer story about Bob Hope. And Bob Hope used to have his golf balls all around the lobby of his house. And he used to make the writers come over there to get paid. And he would toss the checks off of his balcony to them. Interior
balcony. Jesus Christ.
And this one guy came in with his name on a golf ball and planted the golf ball in one of Bob's baskets of golf balls. And then on his way out, after he'd scrambled for his check, he reached in and he picked up a golf ball. And Hope said, what are you doing stealing my golf ball? And the guy said, no, this one is mine. Said, no, it can't be yours. Those are my golf balls. And he said, well, it's got my name on it. Hope completely freaked out.
Wow.
Had no idea what to do.
And I think...
Oh, well, enjoy the golf ball then.
And I think you're the one that told me the story that Hope, one time, like the writers, would have to be with, you know, on call 24 hours.
Yes, yes.
He could call them 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, yeah.
And they,
that's
and,
right.
And one time there was a writer in bed with his wife about to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And could you tell that story?
Hope called up because he wanted to talk to the guy. And she answered the phone. And the guy was like, no, don't tell him I'm here. Don't tell him I'm here. And Hope finally said, well, where is he? And she said, well, he said he was with you. And Hope said, oh, yeah, there he is right now. Sorry to bother you.
That's great.
So,
oh, that's wonderful.
So that tells you right there how many times Bob Hope fucked around on Dolores.
St. Charles Borromeo, which is a massive Catholic church, I hope I don't get in trouble for this, is called the Church of the Pussy Built, because every time Bob Hope fucked around on Dolores, he had to give a donation to the church.
Fantastic. This is gold.
Now, I've heard that. I obviously wasn't there personally for that, but I've heard it from enough people I kind of believe.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
And now back to the show.
Wait, do you know Gene Parrott? Do you know any of Hope's writers, JJ?
I may have met them because I belonged to the same golf club right as him for a little while, but I can't say I actually.
We got to get a Hope writer on here and try to verify.
And verify,
yeah.
Yeah,
because
yeah. I heard these stories generally from longtime Tonight Show writers and mm-hmm. those kind of writers, the variety writers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I tend to believe them. Plus, I like the stories, so I'm going to believe them anyways.
Since we're talking about when you guys met back in the days and in the improv days, I want to ask you a little bit about your act, J.J. Houston. And by the way, one of your Carson shows is on YouTube. I watched it today. Do you know that?
Oh, gosh.
You were on with Lee Ullman.
Oh, that might have been my first one.
I think it was your second one. I think the first one was Charles Grodin. But I'm
yes, you may be right.
You used to do a bit where you would take strange suggestions, you would take unrelated suggestions from the audience and turn it into a song. That was your closer?
Yeah, my closer. And it could be a Motown opera or a blues song or a country song. And it was kind of half memory trick and half song, because I think the maximum number of suggestions I ever took was 17. And I remembered them and managed to. But it was a great closer.
It's impressive.
I always say I was a much better live act than I was ever a TV act. I did well enough on TV. But
do you remember this, Gil? Do you remember him doing this?
I do. That was the ending. Yeah,
that's right.
You'd pick out a bunch of words from the audience, and you'd make it into an entire song with those words.
Right, right. And when it worked, it was really, really fun. Of course, when it didn't work, it was horrible.
And to show how like psychotically secretive I mm-hmm. am, one time after I've known you for like God knows how many.
A long time, yes. And had pretended to be my good friend for a long time.
And so you called the house.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Dara picked up. And she said, I think it's finally time. I kind of knew a little while before that because of your friendship with my daughter, with Daisy, who you never said anything inappropriate to.
I'm sure.
I'll get to that
in a minute. I'm sure that's true.
But yeah, Dara finally said, JJ, do you know who this is? And that's how we met. You actually never told me.
Yeah.
Dara just kind of broke the silence. And like I said, I had a little suspicion. My daughter, the classical pianist, by the way, when she would excuse herself from our dinner table after we fed Gilbert for free for the 7th uh-huh. time.
I know it well.
She would be going off to practice her classical piano, and he would say, you know what happens to girls that practice piano? They become junkie dyke prostitutes.
So nice. How old was she at this point?
6, 7, 8.
Nice. Nice.
I mean, he said it for years, but probably started around that age.
And I remember you one time saying to me, we were talking on the phone, you said, so you're coming out to L.A. this week. and I said, oh, how'd you know? And you said, well, you were talking to my daughter, and in between calling her a big dyke, you said you'll be in L.A. and you'll stop.
That's how I found it.
I assume your daughter has grown up well adjusted in spite of this.
She actually has. I don't know how she ever dealt with him as a child, but she somehow
did.
Good
for her.
It's the only faith I have that his children will end up okay.
There's no chance of that.
Well, that and Dara.
They got a 50-50 shot.
Tell us about those Carson shows, JJ. That was a big deal for you at the time.
Oh, yeah. Well, if nothing else, it doubled or tripled your pay, so that part was good on the road. The first one I thought was good, and I had an ad-lib in the middle of it, which was a lot of fun. And the second one I thought was better. I never did get called over the couch, which was a bit of a disappointment. But, it was fun. And
it was still a feather in your cap to be called back a second time.
Oh, without question. And I got one of those, hey, he gave me the okay sign.
Saw it today.
It's
great.
Yeah.
And I also remember that the two of us and your wife were picked out to do these comedy Miller beer commercials.
That's right. That's right.
And we
came out here together, remember?
Oh, yeah.
Los Angeles, I mean, I should say.
Yeah, we flew out together. And, I remember you played like a bartender in the commercial.
You ain't going to see no Ruskies drink or make beer like that, I think was the line. And literally that week, the Russians shot down KAL Korean Airlines 007 or whatever the number of their flight was. And they yanked the commercial off the air so quickly.
Oh, man.
My head was probably spinning on air. And that was another one that I thought was kind of, oh, boy, this is a big break.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, what's his name? The guy with the bullhorn, Glenn Super.
Oh, Glenn
yes.
Super.
Yeah, he did that.
Mr. Bullhorn.
Campaign. Yes.
And then I remember my commercial never made it to the air because I improvised two beer bottles talking to each other.
And they fucked. And
the head of the agency said that they felt that one of the beer bottles seemed gay.
Oh, my God.
Unbelievable. We can't do that. Which almost tells you automatically that the head of the agency was gay.
Oh, yes.
almost by definition.
You remember Quisp and Quake? Do you remember the cereals, the breakfast cereals?
Yes, sure. It was like Jerry Lewis imitator
doing Quisp.
And a John Wayne imitator was Quake.
I knew a guy named Al Kilgore who was an illustrator who designed those characters. And they thought, the sponsor thought that the design of Quake, that he was too effeminate.
And that was a John Wayne.
He got a minor helmet. And they scrapped him. They scrapped the original art, and they redrew him. They redesigned him, and he came back as a gaucho. He came back.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because he was too gay. a too effeminate serial mascot.
I don't think I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, it's a fun story. How did you make the transition from doing stand-up to getting into half hours as a warm-up comic?
It was a couple of different ways. Yes, warm-up comic was definitely one. At one point, I was the king of the warm-ups out here, and that taught me never to want to be king of a country that I didn't want to live in.
It's the toughest job in show business.
Yeah. Very difficult.
Being a warm-up comic.
And wonderful. I mean, I got to know all the people at Cheers and all the people at Newhart, and it was great that way. But it was really, you're basically doing some form of stand-up for 4 hours, except for somebody else, not for your...
Right,
you're not
they haven't really come to see you.
Right,
right,
right. Right. And then I was also, a couple of them to give me a job doing studio warm-ups would give me a script assignment or a part or whatever. And I always kind of said to my wife that, at one point or another, one of these three things will pull me further. And the writing, the TV writing started and producing. And also my daughter was born around then, so I wanted to kind of stay off the road a little bit more.
Right.
So that's basically it. I kind of stumbled into it. I don't think stand-ups, I think, are among the few breeds that actually do plan on something. I think, by and large, most of us kind of stumble through and wind up someplace one day.
Well, I know a lot of stand-ups who became half-hour writers. So our mutual friend Tom Hertz.
Tom is a good friend.
Yeah, for one.
That's true. That's true. I think there was an era. I think the 80s and more the 90s, they drew a lot of stand-ups. I think Roseanne started that, Tim Allen, whatever I said about him before. Basically, it was all that trend. So there, and Seinfeld, obviously.
But yes.
There were stand-ups heading shows, so it made sense that they hired stand-ups to write them, too.
I think David Feldman was a writer on Roseanne.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's always funny when I watch the closing credits of a sitcom, and I'll go, oh, I remember him. And it'll be all these different comics.
Oh,
I
yeah.
remember
yeah.
from the club.
Oh, you'd see like Billy Grunfest's name would show up on Mad About You or Steve Scroven or these guys that started
in the
clubs.
I saw Scroven a couple of weeks ago.
Funny,
Scroven
funny
plays
guy.
Baseball on my daughter's baseball team. On my daughter's boyfriend's baseball team, although she's playing next week. But I saw Scroven.
Funny guy.
He's a nice guy, too.
Yeah.
Was the first show FM with Robert Hayes? Was that the first
no,
sitcom?
No, it was the same producer, Alan Burns.
Oh, Alan, great Alan Burns,
Tyler
yeah.
Moore. Yeah, but I think there was that show before, Eisenhower and Lutz. Starring Scott Bakula and Patricia Richardson. So obviously this guy had an eye for talent, you know, because both of them have lengthy careers. But yeah, Eisenhower and Lutz was the first script. And then Lenny Clark show was the first actual staff job. And they had an actor called Peter Dobson that we knew was going to get himself in trouble because he would do things like get haircuts between the first show and the second show. And I mean, severe haircuts. Like a big. And we did a run-through. We were all pissed off at him, and we changed his character's name to Mr. Dickhead. He got so pissed off.
That's funny. Lenny Clark, another funny guy.
Yeah, Lenny is a very funny guy.
Very
He's a sweetheart.
Yes.
I also remember working on one of your shows, and I guess it was a Universal production because we were right near the theme park.
Oh yeah, that would have been the Tom Arnold show. That would.
And I started nagging you to get me on the rides.
Yes.
at Universal. And you had, like, writing to do and rewrite the whole script and everything. And then finally, of course, because I kept nagging you, you took me there, and I remember you going, I don't know when it became the producer's job to get Gilbert on the rides. But
and I was the executive producer and the showrunner. I'm driving around in a golf cart to put you on roller coasters. Maybe that's the reason I'm not a bigger deal today. Maybe I spent too much time doing that kind of stuff.
You don't strike me as a rides guy, Gilbert.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like a roller coaster, huh?
No roller coaster.
Oh, just the kiddie rides.
Yeah.
Like the Mr. Toad's magic.
Oh, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Oh, those kind of things.
Yeah.
The E.T. ride on the bike on the wire.
Oh, yeah. Oh, where you got to shoot at stuff as you're
okay. A man who grew up in Coney Island who doesn't go on a roller coaster.
Doesn't go on a roller coaster.
I've been on roller coasters, but I never really enjoyed them.
Now, I've been on my last one now. Daisy, my daughter, and I went on a kind of quest one time. We went on, I think, 7 or 10 roller coasters in one day, and then it was like, okay.
That's enough of that.
Next one is going to be a stroke.
Speaking of character names, JJ, you were talking about how you changed the name of Dobson's character. How did a character named JJ Wall show up on the Newhart show?
I was doing the warm-ups for Newhart, and that was one of the ways they kept me there. I don't remember that they named any character.
I
JJ
found Wall. Doing some
really?
Research. Yep. I'll send it to you. It's on IMDb.
Okay.
A character named JJ Wall. And you played a security guard yourself.
I played Floyd D. Barber. And they actually cut out my best line. And it was, this is how long ago it was. It was a RoboCop impression. But as I walked off like RoboCop. And I got a huge laugh, but they weren't sure if a couple of the regular characters, like I said, I was just the warm-up guy that they threw a bone to. They weren't sure if a couple of the regular characters were staying, so they had to lengthen their storyline, and I lost my big laugh line. But that was a fun part. They were nice to me. They were very nice.
The Newhart show.
Newhart was great, because Bob Newhart would come out and do 10 minutes of stand-up before my warm-up started, or maybe, 5 minutes after I started, and then I would introduce him. So it set them to listen to a stand-up for the whole night.
Oh, that helps.
That made that whole job much more fun.
And a sweetheart of a guy.
Was a great guy.
Both of
wonderful
them.
Wonderful guy.
Poston, too.
Great guy. We've Poston heard... later worked on Grace Under Fire, actually.
That's right.
Yeah, he played Dave Thomas's father. And at one point, I was standing watching some rehearsal. And I mean, this close. It's 5 inches behind my head. I hear, you know what the problem with abortions are? We're not having enough of them. It was Tom Post. He just had that weird. He had a Gilbert-like sense of humor. It was a total.
Oh, I love him for that.
And I remember You had me on Till Death.
Yes.
As the next door neighbor who has a really big dick.
Hot wife and a big dick. Yes. Well, we wanted to get it as close to life as possible.
Yeah, where I go, I'm playing tennis with Brad Garrett, and then where we go into the locker room, and it's supposed to be that I take my clothes off. And he stares between my legs, just horrified by how big it is.
Can you call
that
Brad and get him
right
on the podcast, for God's sake?
No, I never remember those things. It's like I could be having lunch with Al Jolson, and I'll go,
get him.
Ooh, he would have been good.
After the lunch, on your way home. You should have asked him about the podcast.
Tell us about Ed McMahon, who was on the Tom Show.
Ed McMahon was, first of all, surprisingly funny. Almost got Johnny Carson on that show.
You almost did.
We were trying to hire an assistant for Ed McMahon, who was a morning radio host. And it was the first time that Johnny actually considered one of those things, because he said it would make kind of sense that he would be hired as Ed's assistant, as sidekick.
Yeah.
And all he would have had to do was sit in the hallway. We didn't have to do anything. And we were really close.
Oh, that would have been a great gag.
But Ed was a wonderful man. I mean, Christmas, he got in a golf cart, and I think everybody on the lot got a gift. He just went riding around handing out gifts. And, of course, later went bankrupt. So. I guess you shouldn't hand gifts out to everybody.
You know,
he
was an underrated actor, I think, JJ. The Incident on the Subway.
Oh,
with,
that's right.
With Tony Musante
Martin Sheen, Brock Peters,
yeah.
Jack Gilford.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do remember the movie often. Now I got to revisit it. But yeah, Ed was a decent actor.
And fun with Dick and Jane. He was George Siegel's boss.
And then
natural actor.
I think he popped
That's
up
right.
in one of those blaxploitation movies where he was a villain.
Like what? Like Drinking Your Juice in the Hood, one of those movies?
Yeah, but around the time of like Shaft and Dolomite and all those.
Mm-hmm. Oh, back then,
he tried to take a stab at being a real actor at one point before Carson.
Yeah.
When he still had the dark hair, he was trying to act a little bit.
I remember him as a game show host, and I remember him hosting Snap, mm-hmm. Snap Judgment and shows
and
in the early 70s, late
60s. I think he used to claim also that his parents or his grandparents or some part of his family invented mayonnaise. That it was originally called McMayonnaise.
Really?
And he told the story seriously. I don't know if it was true or not.
What kind of guy was he to spend time with?
He was delightful.
Yeah.
He was delightful. We went up to dinner to his house one time. He had a party. And he made a big speech about how much better he was now that he was just drinking red wine. And he was great. He was fun. There's very few of them that I've met so far that haven't been. Especially successful people.
Yeah.
And successful people, if they're not happy, I feel like saying, get a fucking grip. You just hit the lottery. You know.
Right, of course.
Now, I witnessed that one incident with you and Tom Arnold. So how was it working with Tom Arnold?
It was a very, I'll never forget a table reading where he had to get up for a minute. And he called his assistant, whose name I think was Vinny. He said, Vinny, I'm going to the can. Bring my cigar. Oh my God. Vinny has the worst job in the world.
Oh, that's funny.
And I think in a weird way, it made the rest of the show easier for me because I was like, well, I don't have to bring a cigar to him in the can. But he would conduct meetings. He had one of those vibrating massage chairs. And he would conduct meetings while he was lying in the chair vibrating. Just the strangest thing in the world. You're trying to talk to this guy, and he's literally like,
hilarious. Tell us about Larroquette, too, another guy who's a wonderful
Larroquette,
terrific comic actor.
I saw not long ago. A wonderful comic actor.
Yeah, we love him.
He was a good guy. He was a little darker because he had his, he overcame the AA thing.
Or sure.
Whatever the correct terminology for that is. My wife cracked up one time because before we all started working on the show, we had to read the big blue book, the Alcoholics Anonymous book. And I was sitting at my dining room table drinking a gigantic glass of vodka and reading through the Alcoholics Anonymous book. But, he's still married to the same woman. He's one of those guys. He's had three or four kids. And
You ever work with him, Gil? John Larroquette?
Yes, terrific yes. Comic actor. I did like 3 episodes of Night Court.
Oh, that's right. You did Night Court.
That would be that. Yeah, I think he was funnier in Night Court than he was in the John Larroquette show, more because Night Court was just set up for him to be funnier, you know, whereas the John Larroquette show had to have a little dark stuff. But John Larroquette is where I wrote an episode who had a title that I was the proudest of, which was called There's a Mr. Hitler Here to See You. Because I thought it pretty much told the whole story of the episode right at that point. And it was Nazis that wanted to rent a bus from the place.
Yeah, because on the John Larroquette show, it was written in that he was an alcoholic. Wasn't
right.
It?
Yeah, that was the premise.
Well, yeah, it was always, yeah, it was that was built in.
Yeah.
And I think the original title was Crossroads or whatever. But yeah, Liz, I'm ashamed to say, Liz Torres was in that show.
Liz Torres, also funny.
Yeah. Yeah, very funny.
Yeah.
And she was very funny in that show and also one of the delightful people. Jill Mitchell, who later got in a motorcycle accident and now is in a wheelchair, but is in, what is it, NCIS Louisiana? Whatever, the New Orleans, yeah. CSI New Orleans.
What was the Army show?
That was my own creation that tanked in about 12 episodes.
It was a little, do I have this right? It was a little Bilko-ish? It was a little bit of
That's
a...
what I wanted it. I wanted it to be, because that's really the only kind of show you can do about the services when there's no wars going on. You
know, right.
You can't really do any kind of significant show about it. And I had a wonderful cast of characters. Dave Higgins was in it. Brian Posehn was in it.
Oh, bro. Very funny guys.
Funny people. Yeah. But then I had to hire another guy who was more handsome because the network wanted that kind of thing. And then it's just a tough premise to keep going. I thought it was funny, but we got slammed by critics.
All right, so we're going to stop here. The stories are too good, and we've got a lot more to go with JJ. We don't want to let him go, so we're going to pick it up next week where we left off. Part 2 with Gilbert's old pal, JJ Wall. Sessions.